Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of January 18th through 25th. We're joined this week by our editor, Father Drew Christensen. Welcome, Father Drew.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be with our readers as well as our listeners.
Well, we're here to talk about an editorial and a subject that we've been addressing recently, which is the philosopher, theologian, Reinhold Niebuhr, whose name has been in the news quite a lot recently, and was brought up a lot in reference to President Obama's speech at Oslo accepting the Nobel Peace Prize. Maybe, Father Drew, you can just begin by introducing Reinhold Niebuhr to those who may not be familiar with him.
Well, Niebuhr, for most of his career, was a professor of social ethics at Union Theological Seminary here in New York. And he began as a pastor in Detroit and as a social, what was called at the time, a social gospeler. And gradually, during the 30s, with the struggles over organized labor and so on, he began to develop a sense that goodwill alone and idealism was not enough, that you needed to balance power with power. And so he backed organizing movements of various kinds. And then as the Second World War approached, he began to see that, you know, in world affairs too, you needed to have a balance of forces, that you couldn't defeat evil or sustain good unless there was a countervailing power in the world. Eventually, he became kind of the articulator of a philosophy of what was called Christian realism, but even diplomats and political scientists listened very carefully to him. Hans Morgenthau, who taught international relations at the University of Chicago and was probably the most famous realist in international relations theory, said that Niebuhr was the father of us all. But by realism, he meant that you needed countervailing power to deal with the evil in the world, and that groups would always act out of self-interest. That's a view that he modified, reflecting on his work with Catholics and Jews, where the traditions call for more corporate action and saw social groups as being able to do good together. That was the point of his very last book, Man's Nature and His Communities. But generally, he's known for his Christian realism and the notion that you, in groups, as he said, moral man in moral society, that if the individual is egoistic, so much more is the nation with its ability to put myths and symbols and justifications over its actions that are even greater than that of the individual and kind of blind people to its self-interest that act in history.
Now, one of the reasons, as I said, we're talking about Reinhold Niebuhr today is that his name has been floated quite a lot in the news media since, as you note, President Obama named him as his favorite philosopher in an interview with New York Times columnist David Brooks. How do you see Niebuhr's thought shaping Obama in any way, especially his foreign policy?
I mean, I think the Nobel lecture, as it's called, reflects that Niebuhrianism very strongly, and the commentators picked up on it very vigorously. But that stands out, it seems to me, of all the speeches he's given. He's generally tried to foster, in his speeches at least, more positive kinds of engagements with the Muslims of the world. In his speech in Cairo last June, the previous April, with his announcement that he was not going ahead with the missile defense system in Eastern Europe, so there with the Russians. His speeches on foreign policy have generally tended to look for leadership by example and leadership by recognizing mutual interests and so on and so forth. This speech was very forthright in defending war as a tool of peace, just as Niebuhr would, and defending the American role in international affairs, particularly its military role, and kind of arguing that the use of force in the past and the future has been justified by the kind of security that the U.S. has given the world through its blood and its treasure. I think what was missing from the Niebuhrian side was Niebuhr's sense of irony, that Niebuhr always, as I said, understood that there was egotism or egoism involved in national activity, and that there were pretensions, as he called them, and rationalizations, myths, that covered up those negative aspects of self-interest and the negative acts of history. And this speech is that way. I mean, it affirms the good that war has done and the good that military defense has done, but outside of a general acknowledgement of the atrocities that take place in war, generally, it doesn't acknowledge the kind of destabilizing role that U.S. military foreign policy has had from Vietnam through Central America, through coups in places like Chile and elsewhere, so that it tries to justify the use of force as a primary means for keeping the peace by passing over the ways in which the use of force or support of dictators and so on has not done so in years past. I think David Cartwright from the Kroc Institute at Notre Dame, the Peace Institute there, has a fine article of The Nation called Peace and War in Oslo, where he looks at the speech on the question of just war and says, look, this is the record, and this is what Obama didn't tell you about American history. Niebuhr would have been admitting that, and in the more literary selections that we had in our own editorial, we tried to make the same point, that there are shortcomings in American foreign military policy that the president didn't admit. And for one, at least, I thought that the Nobel lecture platform was an inappropriate place to talk about war as as the principal way of sustaining peace. Cartwright, in his article in The Nation, actually cites a lot of figures, including some by David Cullens, one of the foremost students of counterterrorism and guerrilla warfare, saying that as much as 80% of the defeat of terrorists and guerrillas over the past 30 years has been done by police methods and diplomatic tools and other non-military tools. And I think that's important to kind of keep in mind in this context.
Another question is, you know, how did Niebuhr, what was the trajectory of his thought? Where did, you mentioned earlier, maybe we can go into a little more detail, some of the things he wrote later in his career about peacekeeping and efforts to build peace around the world. Maybe you could talk about that.
I think he was quite elderly at the time of the Vietnam War. He died while the Vietnam War was still on, but he'd become an opponent of the Vietnam War. And I think that had a lot to do with his understanding of the ironies of American history. And in addition to kind of, therefore, looking at international affairs a bit more as an internationalist and less as an advocate of American power, not entirely so. I mean, he didn't abandon the notion that, you know, a nation needed to exercise power to prevent evil things from happening. But he did kind of begin to think that you needed to look more closely at international communities as the place where this would happen. And I think, you know, when he talks in his introduction to his autobiography, Man's Nature, not his autobiography, but his retrospective book at the end of his life, where he gets an autobiographical introduction, he says that his work with Jews and Catholics had a lot to do with his understanding that there was more capacity for good in groups and in the collaboration between groups than he had thought before. And I think it was partly the ecumenical movement that took place after the war, his collaboration on issues probably like nuclear weapons with John Courtney Murray, his work with other Catholics and Jews as well in the labor movement, since the Jews and Catholics together are really the leaders of the labor movement in the United States, that he began to see that groups that valued social groupings and didn't just see the individual or the state as the kind of the alternative, but saw intermediary societies as having a role to play, could understand the potential both within a domestic society and internationally for cooperation in a way that he hadn't imagined in his earlier career. But that was rather late in his career. But the thing I think that the commentators, including Brooks, miss is that sense of irony. You know, that ran through the whole of his writing. You know, certainly Moral Man and Immoral Society, Man's Nature and Communities stressed very much that the reality of original sin. He later said he He wished he hadn't called it original sin. He just thought it was the empirical reality that political scientists ought to take into account, and that the theological language kind of meant that people didn't pay enough attention to it. But later, as he mentioned rationalization and myths and all those things in the early books, but as he went on in the Irony of American History, Children of Light, Children of Darkness, other shorter books that were commentaries on world affairs, there's a greater sense of this irony, which means he was beginning to develop a sense that, well, you know, you run real risk when you want to baptize power. It seems to me that some of what President Obama was doing in his Nobel lecture was doing that. He talks a lot about various kind of peace-building activities towards the end of his address, but they're really the kinds of activities that one could have cited 20 years ago. And in the last 20 years, a lot more have developed. And part of our editorial is to say, you know, he could have cited some of these things. And the Nobel platform is a place to promote some of these activities. And he lost that opportunity. In some sense, I think this was the Nobel speech was more a speech to an American audience, and particularly his white right-wing critics who liked this speech, than it was to the international community, which had drawn so much hope from his internationalist statements in the past.
Is there perhaps one short book or one piece or article by Niebuhr that you would urge President Obama to read? I mean, it seems like a lot of people have read Moral Man and Moral Society. Is it The Irony of American History? Is it this later book that you just mentioned?
Well, I think there are two things to read. One would be The Irony of American History, because it deals with the shadow as well as the light of American history. And I think, let's see whether he calls it the introduction or the preface to Man's Nature and His Communities. It's the introduction, Changing Perspectives, in which he looks on his past life. And he does still adhere to some of his basic views, but he shows how he changed his views and how he began to view internationalism as more important and cooperation as a greater potential of human nature and human groups. And I think that's really important, not just for Obama, probably less for Obama than for the commentators who've only read Moral Man and Immoral Society and not read the whole corpus, not followed his thought in detail. His own career is really very varied in the sense that he made a lot of political moves. And I don't remember now the name of the biography, but there's a very fine biography written about him about 30 years ago. And one of the things it indicates is that he changed his friendships as he changed his politics. There's only one friend who was kind of a spiritual father who was a bishop in Missouri, an Episcopal bishop in Missouri, with whom he kept his friendships over the years. He would change his friendships with his political convictions. So there were lots of changes, and he was tacking a lot politically himself all through his life. But the introductory essay in Man's Nature's Communities will at least sketch out some of those changes, and I think The Irony of American History will kind of give people a sense for the underside that we need to keep in mind when we're trying to justify the use of power.
Well, we want to thank Father Drew Christensen for introducing us to Reinhold Niebuhr and also making mention of some of those books and the article by David Courtwright, which we will put links up to on our website. Father Drew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tim, and thanks to all our listeners.
We want to thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. A reminder that the books mentioned in this conversation were The Irony of American History and Man's Nature and His Communities, specifically the introduction. Father Christensen also mentioned the biography of Reinhold Niebuhr, which is written by Richard Whiteman Fox. You can also look online this week for a video introduction to the theology of Edward Skillebex, who passed away just last month. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.